Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Welcome to Crimatorium. Laurie Shaver was a Florida woman whose seemingly ordinary life unraveled when authorities uncovered the body of her husband, Michael Shaver, buried in the backyard beneath a concrete slab. Michael, born in New York and just 33 years old at the time, was a Disney employee who disappeared in 2015. For years, Laurie claimed he had simply walked away from their marriage. However, suspicions grew when family and friends reported him missing in 2018, leading investigators to uncover the truth. Laurie Shaver was charged with second-degree murder in connection with her husband's death. This episode presents a condensed version of her trial, edited for clarity and length. The opening statement from the prosecution begins at after 30 seconds of progress.
Birthright and at Epcot. They both were set to work on November 10th of 2015. They worked the night shift, which was 7 p.m. or to 7 in the morning. Tuesday, November 10th, 2015, rolled around. Michael Shaver didn't show up for work. Didn't show up. He didn't call saying, hey, I'm not coming in. This was unusual for Michael Shaver not to show up for work and not to call saying, hey, I can't make it for whatever reason. November 11th, 2015, Wednesday, came along. Michael Shaver was supposed to work that day as well. Mr. Shaver didn't show up. Didn't call in and say, hey, this is what's going on. I can't make it to work. So now that he has not shown up for work for two straight days and not called anyone letting them know, Michael Shaver's boss, John Borglum, gets involved. John Borglum tried to reach out to Mr. Shaver to find out what's going on. He did so, and John Borglum got a text from Michael Shaver's phone indicating he's not coming to work, that he was having issues at home, that he was in Georgia, and to go ahead and fire him. The evidence will show, ladies and gentlemen, that Michael Shaver was not in Georgia. Michael Shaver was dead. After not showing up for work for several days, after knowing that Michael Shaver had not shown up to work for several days, Frank Merritt went to the Shaver residence and made contact with his wife, the defendant, Ms. Laurie Shaver. Frank Merritt asked about Mike. The defendant said Michael Shaver, her husband at the time, was in Georgia. He said that a co-worker of Mike's, a guy named Robert Mercado, picked Mr. Shaver up and drove him to Georgia, and he was gone. The defendant said that Michael Shaver left because she and Mr. Shaver had an argument. Frank Merritt did notice that Michael Shaver's car was still on the Shaver residence property and it had a flat tire. Frank Merritt texted Michael Shaver here and there several times. He got responses occasionally from Michael Shaver's phone, but never had the ability to speak directly with Michael Shaver to verify that Mr. Shaver was the one sending the messages. As I said, the evidence will show that Michael Shaver was dead. He was not the one responding to those text messages. The evidence is going to show that the defendant gradually got rid of Michael Shaver's property. She sold his four-wheelers, sold some expensive tools, sold guns. She knew Michael Shaver wasn't coming back. She knew Michael Shaver wasn't going to need those things because she knew Michael Shaver is dead. You're going to hear from Robert Mercado, the person that the defendant indicated taking Michael Shaver out that drove him to Georgia. Robert Mercado also worked with Michael Shaver at Epcot, but they didn't work at the same ride. They worked at different rides, so they didn't see each other on a regular basis. Saw each other occasionally, but not all the time. Mr. Mercado will explain to you that there were plans for a work-type Thanksgiving get-together to happen at the Shaver residence. So Mr. Mercado sent some text message to Michael Shaver several weeks before this get-together was supposed to happen to see, hey, are their plans still a go? Are we still doing this thing? He got no response. Mr. Mercado texted Michael Shaver several times, two or three times. Eventually, Michael Shaver's phone responded to Robert Mercado and said, leave me alone, I'm working on my marriage and my family. Robert Mercado did not actually speak with Michael Shaver at that time. That communication was done by text only. Again, the evidence will show Michael Shaver at this time was dead. Most importantly, Robert Mercado will explain to you that at no time during the weekend or around the weekend of November 7th of 2015 did he go over to the Shaver residence. At no time did he load Michael Shaver up as an SUV. And at no time did he take Michael Shaver to Georgia, directly contradicting the statements that the defendant was making to various people about where Michael Shaver went. You'll hear from Corey Lutzo, another friend and co-worker of Mr. Shaver. They also worked together at Spaceship Earth, and he was also supposed to go to this work Thanksgiving get-together at the Shaver residence. Mr. Lutzo will tell you that after the weekend of November 7th, 2015, he never saw or personally spoke to Michael Shaver. You'll hear from Michael Shaver's family. You'll hear from his father, Doug Shaver, his brother, Brian Shaver, Christine Hort, his sister, Desiree Snyder, his niece, Stacey Turner, his sister. And they'll explain to you that they had contact with Michael Shaver over the years to varying degrees and varying frequencies. But following November of 2015, none of those family members ever saw or personally spoke to Michael Shaver. They received some messages here and there, maybe by text or some Facebook messages, but never actually had any contact with Michael Shaver to actually hear his voice and to verify he was alive. The evidence will show that was because Michael Shaver at that time was dead. He was not the one sending Facebook messages and text messages. You'll hear from a man named Scott Amatuccio. He was a close friend of both the defendants and Michael Shaver's because they all grew up together. He'll tell you very similar information that about not seeing or directly speaking with Michael Shaver after November of 2015. For a several year period of time between November of 2015 into 2018, Mr. Amatuccio eventually realized, now I haven't heard from Mike recently. I really haven't heard anything from him. Started to get a little bit concerned. So Scott Amatuccio reached out to Michael Shaver's family, whom he knew because, again, he grew up with Michael Shaver, and learned that nobody had directly spoken with him or seen him since November 2015. Scott Amatuccio also learned about a concrete slab that had been laid in the back of the Shaver residence. And he became concerned. Because of this concern, Scott Amatuccio reached out to the Lake County Sheriff's Office and asked that they go to the Shaver residence. Somebody from law enforcement go to that Shaver residence and try to make contact with Michael Shaver if he was there, find out what's going on with Michael Shaver. I haven't heard his phone. I also asked him to take a look at that concrete slab in the back where there was now a fire pit, same place that duck pond was supposed to be. So based on the information received by Scott Amatuccio, Lake County Sheriff's Office became involved. On February 16th of now 2018, Deputy Corey Anderson from the Lake County Sheriff's Office went out to the property and made contact with the defendant, Lori Shaver. Deputy Anderson asked about Michael Shaver, asked about, where's your husband? The defendant said that she and Michael Shaver were separated, that he picked up and left, and that she had no idea where he was. Based on Scott Amatuccio's concerns about this concrete slab where the duck pond was going to be in the back, Deputy Corey Anderson asked permission to go and take a look around the property. The defendant allowed that. Deputy Anderson got to the area where this concrete slab was located, and he noticed something unusual about that slab. You noticed that there was a depression in that concrete slab, the place where that slab was sagging into the ground. Deputy Anderson knew that when a body is buried and a body is decomposing, that decomposition process eventually leaves a void for where that body was located, which caused the depression. Seeing this depression in the concrete, combined with the concerns of Scott Amatuccio, and now thinking this could be a grave, Deputy Anderson became more suspicious. He actually took out his phone, took a couple pictures of this depression. He then went and provided this information to other detectives at the Lake County Sheriff's Office. He reported what he found and all this information. On March 9th of 2018, law enforcement obtained a search warrant. And a search warrant is basically a document that's signed by a judge that allows law enforcement to go to a location and search and collect certain evidence. So based on the authority given to this by the search warrant, law enforcement, detectives, crime scene investigators went out to the Shaver residence to search for evidence related to the disappearance of Michael Shaver. Crime scene investigators trained in collection of evidence and trained in the collection and excavation of human remains went out to the scene. And with the use of some ground penetrating radar, their focus quickly turned to this concrete slab with the fire hood and where there was depression in that concrete. Some heavy equipment was brought in to dismantle that fireplace and to break up that concrete slab to give them access to the dirt beneath the concrete slab. And that excavation process began. Crime scene investigators began that slow and painstaking excavation process by digging up dirt, sifting that dirt, separating potential evidence, and that process went for a period of time. As they dug and as they dug and as they sifted, they eventually came across a humerus bone, which is a bone in the arm. Because it was getting late at this point, and this crime scene investigator realized that they have a lot more work to do and it's gonna be getting dark pretty soon, they stopped the excavation process and put it on hold till the following morning when it became light out. Law enforcement officers were stationed and posted in the area to make sure that nobody came onto the scene to disturb any of the evidence or do anything to the Shaver residence. The next morning, law enforcement officers, crime scene investigators, medical examiner investigators, and other people went to the Shaver residence to continue this excavation process. As crime scene investigators continued to dig and continued to sift the dirt, they came across a blue tarp buried in the ground. Beneath that blue tarp, they found human remains. The bones and the human remains were clearly skeletonized. Those human remains, there were socks on them. There was a pair of boxers and a pair of shorts on human remains. And a green ratchet type strap was wrapped around those bones. Crime scene investigators carefully collected the bones out of the grave, placed them on a tarp, and those bones were transported to the medical examiner's office for an autopsy to be done. While still on scene, one of the crime scene investigators, Jessica Holcomb, made contact with Mike Shaver's father, Doug Shaver. Doug Shaver had come down from Georgia, down to Claremont, down to the Shaver residence, and he learned that law enforcement was doing this investigation of what law enforcement had found the night before. Crime scene investigator Jessica Holcomb collected a DNA sample from Doug Shaver. She took a swab and put it inside of his mouth and collected what's called a buccal swab, known as a known DNA standard for comparisons. You'll hear that the femur bone collected from the grave, along with the DNA standards from Douglas Shaver, Michael Shaver's father, were sent to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement for DNA analysis. The DNA analyst, Edgar Perez, compared the DNA from that femur bone found in the grave to the known DNA standard of Douglas Shaver and confirmed what at this point was known to everyone. He determined that the DNA from the femur was consistent with coming from a bone of the biological child of Douglas Shaver. This confirmed Michael Shaver, who had been missing and not heard from since November of 2015, was in that grave, deceased. As I said, Michael Shaver's remains were collected and transported to the medical examiner's office for an autopsy to be done. And that's where Dr. Kyle Shaw, one of the medical examiners there, performed an autopsy. When he examined the skull that was recovered, he found an obvious single gunshot wound to the back of the skull, or right in the back of the skull, consisting of that of a gunshot wound. He found a bullet or a projectile inside the skull. And analysis later determined that that bullet was of a 38 caliber class, meaning that bullet could have been fired from a 38, a 380, a 357, or a 9 millimeter. That 38 caliber class can be fired of any of those types of caliber guns because the size is very similar. There was no exit wound to the skull, indicating a single entrance wound, hence the projectile being found inside the skull when it was recovered. Dr. Shaw examined the skull, found no other injuries or no other trauma. He examined all of the other bones collected, and he found no other signs of trauma or injuries, no chips or breaks, no trauma whatsoever in any of the other bones. Based on his analysis, Dr. Shaw determined that the cause of death was the single gunshot wound to the back of the head and determined this to be a homicide. Michael Shaver's remains were then sent to a laboratory associated with the University of Florida in Gainesville. It's a laboratory called the Pound Lab, and they specialize in the analysis and examination of human remains. Dr. Samantha Coberly examined the remains as well, determined the remains were consistent with a young to middle-aged male, of which Michael Shaver was, and they were consistent with having been in the ground for several months to several years. She also examined the skull, saw that single gunshot wound, and confirmed, in her opinion, that was the result of a single gunshot wound. She also examined the skull and the bones and found no other signs of trauma or damage or injury to any other part of the skull or any of the other bones recovered. And almost the entire skeleton was recovered. She also removed some bullet fragments from the inside of the skull, packaged those up, and sent the bullet fragments, all the bones, back to the medical examiner's office. Law enforcement continued to investigate this crime. During the investigation, detectives spoke with a man named Robert Seha. He was a neighbor of the defendants at the Shaver residence lived nearby. Robert Seha is going to tell you that about a month or two before law enforcement came to the Shaver residence to do this well-being check, which led to the unearthing of Michael Shaver's body, the defendant approaches Mr. Seha and offered to sell him a pink and black 38 caliber handgun. The defendant indicated she needed the money to pay some bills, and Robert Seha bought this 38 caliber pink and black handgun from the defendant. Now, law enforcement took this gun because of the 38 caliber, and the projectile found inside Michael Shaver's skull was of a 38 caliber class. So the gun, that 38 caliber gun that the defendant sold to Mr. Sayhoff, was sent along with the projectile recovered from Mr. Shaver's skull to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement for firearms analysis. Firearms analyst Megan Cleek examined that 38 caliber firearm and found it to be in working order. It was functional, it could be fired. She fired some test fires from that gun to then be able to take those test fire projectiles, scientifically and microscopically try to compare to the projectile found in Michael Shaver's skull to see if they were fired from the same gun. And she'll explain to you that every gun, when it fires a projectile, leaves impressions on the projectile. And those, some of those impressions, if they're clear enough, they're unique. And then in certain situations, not always, but sometimes she can microscopically examine the projectile and say this projectile was fired by this gun because the microscopic impressions left match. Though the projectile found in Michael Shaver's skull, that 38 caliber class projectile, was capable of being fired from the gun, the impressions and the markings on the projectile were not clear enough for her to make any other determinations. Nothing indicated that the projectile found in Michael Shaver's skull could not have been fired from the gun. For instance, that projectile wasn't excluded as being fired from the building. There was just not enough detail in the projectile for her to say definitively, this bullet found in the skull was fired from this bullet. Now, remember we talked about Michael Shaver's friends and family had no direct ear, seeing him or speaking to him, hearing this voice. No direct contact with Michael Shaver after that weekend of November 7th, 2015. You'll hear that in December of 2015, a man named Travis Filmer came into the picture, came into the defendant's life. Travis Filmer was a man that the defendant met at a gym around December of 2015. And the defendant and Travis Filmer began to date. And shortly thereafter, Travis Filmer moved into the Shaver residence, the same residence that Michael Shaver's body was found in the backyard. You'll hear that around the end of April of 2016, a posting to the defendant's Facebook account showed a large number of concrete bags in the bed of a pickup truck. Since Michael Shaver's body was found under a concrete slab, law enforcement obviously became interested in this information. So after Michael Shaver's body was found, law enforcement obtained the Facebook records from both Michael Shaver's Facebook account and the defendant's Facebook account. And they looked into trying to determine, that's why, how they found that picture of the concrete in the bed of the pickup truck. And they started looking to determine, when did that concrete slab get poured and how did it get there? Detectives discovered a receipt from Home Depot dated September 12th of 2016 that Travis Filmer rented a concrete mixer. And you'll hear that Travis Filmer and his twin brother, Austin Filmer, poured that concrete slab and laid that concrete slab with that concrete mixer that Travis Filmer rented from Home Depot. That was about 10 months after the November time period when nobody had ever seen Mr. Shaver, Michael Shaver. Yeah. As law enforcement officers continued to investigate this case, they received a couple of names from defendant's defense lawyer, Mr. Witts, as people who potentially had been involved in this homicide. Those names were James Ballou and Jeremy Townsend. Doing their due diligence, law enforcement went and made contact with those two people. You'll hear from Jamie Pulu, who'll tell you that he met the defendant in about 2014 when he was working at Don Neely Chevrolet in Solberg, a truck. Though James Ballou was married at the time, Mr. Ballou began a romantic relationship with the defendant in 2014. The defendant wanted a more serious relationship than what Mr. Ballou wanted. Mr. Ballou was not interested in that kind of a serious relationship with the defendant. That relationship lasted only a few months when Mr. Ballou ended it around the middle of 2014 in order to go try to work things out with his wife. From that point on, James Ballou had no contact with Lori Shaver. So at that time, when James Ballou ended the contact, Michael Shaver was clearly still alive as people had seen him. Law enforcement also tracked down Jeremy Townsend. You'll hear from both Jeremy Townsend and his wife, Vanessa Townsend. Jeremy Townsend will tell you that he met the defendant in a park around September or October of 2015, about 1 or 2 months before Michael Shaver dropped off the face of the earth. Jeremy would take his and his wife's child to the park where he would meet up and where he met Lori Shaver, who was there at the park with her child. Jeremy and his wife, Vanessa, were going through marital problems at the time. And Jeremy and the defendant began an affair. That affair started around December of 2015, about a month after Michael Shaver was last ever seen or heard from. Mr. Townsend would go to the Shaver residence during the defendant's lunch hour. He and the defendant would meet up sexually. And Jeremy Townsend will explain to you that he never met Michael Shaver, and the defendant told him that she and Michael Shaver were divorced. The defendant told Jeremy Townsend the same story that she's told other people, that Michael Shaver or someone came and picked up Michael Shaver, took him to Georgia, and she hasn't seen from him since. The same story that Robert Mercado, the person she says picked Michael Shaver up, says never happened. Around February of 2016, the affair between Jeremy Townsend and the defendant basically started falling apart. The defendant wanted more out of the relationship than it was. Jeremy Townsend saw this relationship as more of a sexual fling type relationship, didn't want to get serious, but the defendant did. The defendant wanted Jeremy Townsend to file for divorce from his wife and wanted Jeremy Townsend to move in with her into the Shaver residence, same residence Michael Shaver's body was found buried by. Jeremy Townsend didn't want that, didn't want to divorce his wife, didn't want to get that serious, and decided that he wanted to work things out with his own wife. Jeremy Townsend and the defendant argued about the status of their relationship together. The defendant started giving Jeremy Townsend an ultimatum. You get rid of your wife, come be with me. Or she was going to expose the affair to Jeremy Townsend's wife. A few months after this fight between Jeremy Townsend and the defendant about exposing the affair, Jeremy Townsend's wife, Vanessa Townsend, received flowers.
Objection. Fist from the front.
Sidebar.
A few months after this fight between the defendant and Jeremy Townsend, where the defendant threatened to expose this affair, Jeremy would be his wife and come meet with her. Jeremy Townsend's wife, Vanessa Townsend, received some flowers at the school where she worked as a teacher. And there was a message with those flowers. The message indicated, check your Facebook account. So Vanessa Townsend checked her Facebook account and she noticed that she received a message from Facebook the same day she received these flowers from somebody purporting to be Mike. Remember, this is about 6 months after anybody had seen or ever spoke Michael Shaver. He's been missing since now November of 2015. This is April of 2016. Vanessa Townsend received this Facebook message from someone claiming to be Michael Shaver, which said that she'll be getting a special delivery. There was also a phone number associated with the delivery of those flowers in that Facebook message. She accepted this friend request from the person supposedly being Michael Shaver and noticed that there were previous messages to her from this same person claiming to be Michael Shaver over the preceding months. She had not seen those text messages or those Facebook messages beforehand because she wasn't a friend of Michael Shaver and didn't notice that they were there. So when she looked at those messages sent purportedly from Michael Shaver's Facebook account, she noticed evidence or she noticed those messages included screenshots of conversation between Jeremy Townsend and the defendant. They included photographs of Jeremy Townsend and the defendant together. They were evidence and proof of the affair that the defendant was having with Jeremy Townsend. And these messages, coincidentally, started very shortly after the fight between Jeremy Townsend and the defendant, where the defendant was giving Jeremy Townsend an ultimatum, to leave your wife or I'll expose the affair. The evidence will show that these messages, these Facebook messages and photos and flowers, were clearly an effort to expose the affair, drive a wedge between Jeremy Townsend and Vanessa Townsend, and drive Jeremy back to the defendant. It didn't work. After much work with their marriage, Jeremy Townsend and Vanessa Townsend got back together, and they were being married. Law enforcement obviously wanted to investigate the source of these flowers, but they know they can't be from Michael Shaver. Michael Shaver's dead. They obtained search warrants. They obtained a search warrant, like I said, for the defendant's Facebook account and Michael Shaver's Facebook account. They found those Facebook messages from Michael Shaver's account to Vanessa Townsend's account talking about the affair, photos, and the flowers, and the delivery, and things like that. They issued subpoenas for the defendant's bank records, for the victim's bank records, and you're going to see that the defendant and Michael Shaver have separate bank accounts. Detectives issued a subpoena for the defendant's cell phone records for Michael Shaver's. And eventually, law enforcement office received all of these records and started to pour through them when they came in. They found that Michael Shaver's cell phone had no outgoing calls after November 7th of 2015, which coincides with the last time anyone had ever seen or directly spoke to Michael Shaver. The defendant's cell phone records didn't show any phone calls or texts to to Michael Shaver's number. Detectives looked at the defendant's bank records, and you'll hear that they traced the purchase of those flowers that were sent to Vanessa Townsend as coming out of the defendant's bank account. Further evidence that the defendant was the one that was responsible for sending those flowers and sending the Facebook messages, acting as if she was Michael Shaver, to Vanessa Townsend. Remember, I said that there was a phone number associated with that Facebook message that I sent to Vanessa Townsend. Well, they looked into that phone number and determined that phone number was associated also with the defendant. Further evidence that the defendant was the one portraying herself to be Michael Shaver after Michael Shaver dead. Because there were a variety of sources indicating that they received text messages or Facebook messages from Michael Shaver after that November 7th, 2015 weekend, detectives dove deeper into the records and deeper, especially into those Facebook records, to see if they could find evidence that someone was logging into Michael Shaver's Facebook records and portraying themselves to be Michael Shaver. But Michael Shaver was dead. And the detectives found such evidence. Detectives investigated the internet protocol addresses provided by Facebook for the accounts of both the defendant and Michael Shaver's Facebook accounts. And for those of you who are not IT directors, an internet protocol, you'll hear that an internet protocol address or an IP address is kind of like a physical address. It is assigned to a particular location through the internet provider like Spectrum, Verizon, Cox, whatever it is that provides internet service to a house or a business. So for example, when I am home, my home is assigned a unique IP address to my house through my internet provider, which just happens to be Spectrum. That IP address is what gives my home access to the internet. That IP address is unique to my house. It's going to be different than my neighbors. It's going to be different than Starbucks. It's unique to me or to my house. Also on my home, or it's a business is something that I explain around. When the router is a device that allows multiple devices inside the house to connect to the internet at the same time, such as if I'm on my phone, if I'm on my laptop, if my wife is on her phone and her laptop, they all can be used together and access the internet. The router sends out signal to those devices. All of us and all those devices will share the same IP address because that IP address is unique to my house. So if I log into Facebook with my phone and I post a photo or I post a message or I do something to my account, Facebook, the organization of Facebook, keeps those records and they keep the IP addresses associated with the device that activated Facebook. Often the internet provider will change IP addresses, but ultimately they are unique to the house. So, if I'm at home, I'm logging on to Facebook, and Mr. Muccio decides to come over to my house, and he logs into my network, we're going to be sharing the same IP address at that same time, because we're in the same general location, the same house, using the same network and the same IP address. Detectives received those Facebook records from the defendant's account and Michael Shaver's account from November 2015 up through about November of 2017. When the detectives got those IP addresses from Facebook, unfortunately, they were not able to determine the physical address that that IP address was assigned to because those records were too old and they had been purged by the internet service provider. They just didn't exist anymore. But what they were able to determine is that during that three-year period of time, from around November 2015 to November 2017, Michael Shaver's Facebook remained active. Despite the fact that he did. There were postings during that period of time. There were photos posted. There were funny little memes posted on his account. His profile picture had changed. His account had been activated and deactivated. There was activity. Some of the activity on Michael Shaver's Facebook account actually occurred after that concrete slab under which his body was found was actually poured. So we know Michael Shaver couldn't have been doing that. When they examined the IP addresses associated with Michael Shaver and the defendant's Facebook account during that time period, detectives noticed that the same IP address was used by both the defendant's and Michael Shaver's Facebook accounts. Sometimes those Facebook accounts were accessed using the same IP address within minutes of each other. The evidence will show that because those accounts share that same IP address, within sometimes minutes of each of activity on each of the accounts, that's consistent with those devices accessing the accounts being located in the same house. The evidence will show that such activity, combined with common sense and all of the other circumstances in this case, is consistent with the defendant logging into Michael Shaver's Facebook account and posting things portraying herself to be Michael Shaver or acting as if she was Michael Shaver. The evidence will show that she did this to carry on the facade that Michael Shaver was still alive, to carry on the facade and alleviate the concerns of his friends or family members who may inquire, to alleviate the concerns of law enforcement who may be asked to go look into where Michael Shaver is. Done to torment Vanessa Townsend by sending her message portraying herself as Michael Shaver, who exposed the affair between the defendant and Jared McCown. All of this done after Michael Shaver. Ladies and gentlemen, as I said, this is a case about common sense. When you look at all the evidence, you listen to the testimony of all the witnesses, you examine all the circumstances, not the least of which is Michael Shaver's body was found buried under a concrete slab in the backyard of the defendant's residence, there can only be one common sense conclusion, and that is the defendant is guilty beyond any reasonable doubt.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Yes, may I please report?
Yes, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've heard the stage open. We've heard one repeated statement. Common sense. Just use your common sense. It's all about common sense. Okay? Now, the judge is going to give you instructions, and he's going to give you penalties under the law. And it's not going to say, just find the defendant guilty by common sense. That's the state stand. The facts are far different from what the state is pronounced here today. And let me tell you, really, how this case originated. What was done and what was not done by the state in this case. Lori Shaver grew up with Michael Shaver of Satan and Wife. He got married as young kids on the shutdown. And it was a tumultuous marriage. Went on for years and years. So it was a lot of physical violence that transpired in the sense of mine. You'll see that there were injunctions imposed that Michael was in the house, he was out of the house. It was ongoing violence. And the Shavers had some children. This was not a pleasant answer. Mr. Shaver, you'll hear, was very possessive. He was very combative. He was very destructive. He opposed fear of his family over and over again. And Miss Shaver did not want to be with Mr. Shaver. That was clear. But Miss Shaver did not resort to violence at any time, in any form, in any manner. What happened was Mr. Shaver was directed to be out of the residence. And as the state announced, yes, she began to date other people, one Mr. Ballou and another guy, Jeremy Townsend. State didn't know about Jeremy Townsend until we told him about Jeremy. What happened was Mr. Townsend had been in the military. I think he was in special forces and training for special forces. And he began to date Lori. This relationship was not, as the state would suggest, some light flame. This went on for months and months. And only after things blew up and Mr. Townsend was confronted, does his tune change. Mr. Townsend, even after these charges were filed, was still following Mrs. Shaver. You hear? Still stalking her. This was a man that was infatuated with Laurie Shaver. Now, they did live on acreage, and there was, as you say, suggest, an intent to build this duck pond. It was going to be a family affair. Kids were out there helping them, trying to build it. And it sounds like, what I understand, they kind of got wore down with the project, said, hey, we don't like ducks that much, basically. So they kind of abandoned their little project, their desire at that stage, but leaving some ground partially exposed. That was the duck pond. It was not designed by Laurie Shaver to bury Mr. Shaver for him to carry out some nefarious intent in the future. That's how that came about, though. Now, what happened was Mr. Townsend was having this affair with Laurie, and Mr. Shaver was not supposed to be at the residence. Morning arrives. Mr. Shaver arrives on the scene. Begins battering Laurie Shaver. He wants her back. She was chattel to him, just like a car or a piece of property. And she informs him, I'm not going, we're not going that, we're not going that. And she starts getting the dead he's been down. When your child heard this, Isabel Shaver, state didn't know about Isabel. We advised the state about Isabel, only to be turned away. Only to be turned away from their office because they formulated a plan. They formulated a design. This is how it happened, but we don't want to hear another story. So we were sent away. But Isabel, I'll tell you what happens. Isabel has her own attorney appointed, like Fowler Johnson. We did not want any appearance, any discussions with Isabel that were unguided, inappropriate, but would look inappropriate. So Ms. Johnson came on to represent her. So Ms. Johnson has advised her of the dangers of taking the stand. However, what could happen to her if she were to take the stand? But Isabel says she's going to tell the truth. I'm not going to tell you what happened. And as she relays, is she's at the residence with her mom. And then Wong's Bible, carrying on. He starts to battle his wife. And as Isabel hears, filling up, she hears a lot of commotion. She hears her mother begging. Leave me alone, leave me alone. She walks in the room. She'll testify. Poor old Michael is sitting in a chair with his foot on Laurie Shaver's head as Laurie's gasping. And Michael is sitting there threatening to kill her. And this young girl, in desperation and in fear, runs and retrieves a firearm. As she believes she shot Michael, she thinks she did. She says she thought she had. She believes she had. But almost simultaneously, in walks Jay. He sees what's going on. Laurie is still on the threat. Laurie has not even got to her deal. And Jay walks in, picks a gun from this about, shoots Michael Shaver in the head. Says, Laurie, get these kids out of here. I'll take care of this. Anybody says a thing about this, I'll kill you too. Boy said, we were like deer in headlights. Got into the car. I took the kids to a store. Isabel said this was so routine, the violence in this household. I was just known. But we didn't shoot. And Mom, as a stake with watching the lady is so infatuated with Jane, broke it off right there. We don't want to see you. Now, Lori assumes Jane has done something with the body. Beyond her knowledge, its whereabouts, or anything. It's just gone. Michael's been the biggest nightmare in her life, but all she can do is bury her thoughts. That's it. Yes, the police come knock, and the police come inquire, and the police come look and around. The police get a warrant, and yes, the body of Michael Shaver is found, unbeknownst to Lori. Mr. Townsend had put him on that ground they were preparing originally for the duck park. Now, the state keeps using words on common sense, just rely on their common sense, because they don't have, really, any evidence, no real world evidence of Lori Shaver killed her. Sure. You are not going to hear any technician, no FDLE person say, yeah, we found Lori Shaver's friends on that park. We found Lori Shaver's DNA on that park. We didn't find any whereabouts or knowledge or connection between that tarp, that gun, that socket wrench, hand wrench, with Lori Shaver. Nothing. Well, we spoke about more guys by life about this. So there's no connective link between Lori and the death of Agnes Attorney. And regrettably, Isabel was placed in the posture now of Agnes Cabantia and tell y'all what happened. Nobody wanted to talk to Isabel. Nobody wanted to look at what truly happened in this case. So here we are. The state's case, as we stated, is really a case of conjecture. It's a case of emotion, something we spoke about before. Something to try to pull at your heart to feel sorry for Michael Shane. So what do they think we're going to do? We're going to get some digital data and say it came from Lori Shaver. That digital data came from Lori Shaver. You'll ask yourself this. How does this digital data prove that Lori Shaver killed Michael Shaver? It doesn't. Now the state and their bravery has not even listed in their information Finn Button that she made an assistant in covering up the crime. Why? Because they knew it's Isabel. And they didn't want to have to deal with that. So Devin's sure. They don't want to look at everything, but they should have looked at it. You see? The state was going on about this digital data. Richard Connor will be called by the defense. He's a digital data guy. I'm one of our jurors. And he'll talk about the exploration of IP registrations, that they expire at time, and then at a certain point, they don't link an IP address to a device, to an individual, or a location. But the state thinks we could pull this out of the ether of space, out of nowhere, and say, well, here's some digital data, throw it at you, and then we're going to assume, and you assume, on top of that, Lori Shaver killed Michael Shaver, when there's no connective link. It's a big step to make an allegation like this. It's a huge step. It's a huger step for you to try to leap to the conclusion based on what the state's going to put before you that Lori Shaver killed Michael Shaver. Instead, what Isabel says is whatever. There's nobody to refute Isabel Shaver. Now, we didn't contrive this with this. We went to the city early on and said, let's level with it. Thinking they're going to go after Jeremy, look at what the cost was. But no, they had fixed the position, formulated a plan. Despite the powers and the responsibilities they have, they're not seeking justice. They're seeking a verdict. And the two are two opposite goals. They're not seeking justice. They're seeking a verdict.
Keep that in mind.
Now, Lori is likewise charged with this crime of accessory. The state has no information, no data, no communications that anybody was given any particular assistance after this event. The most the state can do, the very most the state can do here, is try to say, well, she lied this day, or maybe she lied that day, or maybe she lied that day. Okay. Lori Shaver is not here on trial for lying or making a misrepresentation. That's not evidence of a murder. That's evidence to evoke a motion to try to anger them into a judgment, not justice. They're two different things. Now, the state carries the burden of proof, as we discussed all the way through the case. Lori Shaver is not required to testify. She may. But you will hear from Mr. Cullen. You will hear from Ms. Bell. You will hear that. Okay? And you will hear Jeremy Townsend. What I've discussed with Jeremy Townsend. Well, guys, you're going to watch it. You will acknowledge it. But Jeremy Townsend has spoken with the state. He's dealt with the state. This man's not going to get him on the stand. He's supposed to be tough. Okay? So we could probably infer Mr. Townsend has some negotiated testimony with the state.
Objection, Your Honor. Vivian Roach.
You will see no witness confirmation that Lori Shaver killed Michael Shaver. At the end of the case, the state is going to play out that motion and say, it was this maybe a statement or that misstatement or misdirection here or misdirection there. It's made to the conclusion she killed my children. That's not what cases are built on. They're built on real evidence. We ask that you listen to the evidence, to real evidence, those that you can draw logical conclusions from. Not speculative imaginary conclusions that go as far as if somebody murdered another person. And when you listen to them, we believe that more than one reasonable doubt exists. Multiple reasonable doubts by lack of evidence, the conflict in evidence, and the fact, and without good feeling that we will not be standing, we will waver and vacillate, and based on that direction, because of Jeff Kidman, why the defendant not guilty in this case.
Mr. Barrett, can you please introduce yourself to the jury?
Hello, my name is Frank Barrett. My sheriff's right.
And can you go ahead and spell your last name, please?
M-B-E-R-R-I-T-T.
How long did you know my mission?
About a year.
When you're talking about, you know, for a year, would that then be a year from his disappearance in November 2015?
Yes, I went in November 2014 to 2015.
Did you ever go over to his house that he shared with his wife, Lori Shaver, to visit or socialize?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
And would you socialize with them at other locations as well?
Yes, we did.
How long did you know Lori Shaver?
Probably half that time.
And do you recognize her? Do you see her on the public?
Yes.
Now, where did you first meet up with Mr. Shaver?
At work.
And where was that?
We worked for her. For mothers and wives.
What kind of work did you do for this thing?
Oh, the welder.
And what kind of work did Michael Shaver do for this thing?
Piggy mechanic.
Are you aware he went through an apprenticeship in order to get his job with Disney?
Yes, sir.
And because of the fact he went through their apprenticeship program, did Disney furnish him with tools that he would need?
Yes.
Once that apprenticeship was completed, were those tools still the property of Disney, or was he basically given those tools by Disney?
They were his once he completed.
Now, were you aware of marital issues between Michael Shaver and Lori Shaver over the course of the time you knew them?
Yes.
And did there come a time where he was living at the Warburg's Hangar?
Yes.
And when was that in relation to when you first met him?
Probably during the middle of the summer, 2015.
And during that time that he was separated, was there a period of time where you knew Michael was dating someone else?
Yes.
Who was that?
Ken.
You remember her last name?
I didn't ask you.
No. Now, at some point, did that relationship end and Michael went back to live at the home with his wife to try to wreck his
kids? Yes.
Why would you always go back to that situation?
I didn't want to be your first kids.
Now, after the time frame that he returned to live at the marital home, were there times that you went over to stay at the Shaver residence or the house then?
Yes, sort of. I didn't stay to it. I went to visit her the age.
Okay. And what time frame was that for?
Oh, we do that in the morning when we were over.
Okay, but like what month are we talking about? How close it was to his disappearance?
One time in October and another time in the winter vacation.
And where were Michael and Lori Shaver when you would go over to check on their house?
One time they were in Reno, one time they were up north in Maryland somewhere.
Now I want to take you back to November 15th, specifically November 7th of 2015, which was a Saturday. Were you and Mike working together that day?
No.
Did you see him that day?
Yes.
And where did you see him?
The family's went to the Florida Five Loop Show, Florida Club.
And when you say your families, who from the Shavers was there?
Mike, Laurie, two kids.
What about Torben?
Myself, my wife, and my daughter.
What was your wife saying at that time?
Rita.
Now, at the point that you were going over there, was this in the time frame that Mike was living back at his home?
Yes.
And how long were you all at this event together?
Probably 10 o'clock in the morning until about 1 o'clock in the evening.
Did Mike and Lori with their children leave before your family did?
Yes.
And it is that 1 o'clock approximately when they left?
Yes, sir.
Was this the last time you actually saw or spoke with Michael Shaver?
Yes.
The following day, November 8th, did you try to contact him?
Yes.
And why were you trying to contact him?
He was working on something like that, so needed some products to work with him, so I asked if I had gotten the correct items.
And this item that you got, what was it?
It was a gun balloon kit.
And did he specifically tell you to get that particular type of balloon kit?
No, that's why I was touching to ask him is if I had gotten what he wanted.
And did he ever respond?
No.
And was that unusual that you would reach out to him and that he wouldn't respond?
Yeah, correct.
Now, the following day, Monday, November 9th, 2015, did you try to contact him?
Yes.
And how did you try to contact him that day?
Okay.
And did you receive a response?
Yes.
Was that response, were you still asking about his... how he was doing with the gun, or what were you?
No, his only response to me was he needed to quit his job to save his marriage.
Okay. When you and Mike worked the same shifts?
Yes.
What was the next day that Michael Shaver was scheduled to work?
Tuesday evening.
All right, would that be November 10th?
Yes.
All right. What was the shift that you both worked?
11 at 9, 7:30 and 1.
Is that referred to as the third shift?
Yes.
Did Michael Shaver appear at work that day?
Yeah.
The next day that he was scheduled, was that the following day, November 11th?
Yes.
Once again, third shift?
Correct.
And did he come to work that day?
No.
November 12th, were you both scheduled to work?
Yes.
And did he come in on November 12th?
No.
Some point during this time where Michael is not coming to work, and his manager, John Wardlow, approached you to try to get some information from you?
Yes.
And what type of information was he trying to get?
He was looking for a phone number to make sure he had the correct number to call
him. After he did not come to work for those 3 days, did you take any other efforts to try to check in on Mr. Shaver and check on his whereabouts?
Yes.
What did you do?
I went to the family home Friday morning after work.
And while you were there, did you see Mr. Shaver?
No.
Did you make contact with Lori Shaver?
Yes.
Did you ask him about Michael's?
Yes.
And what did she tell you?
said that she thought he was in Georgia.
Yeah. And why did she say that she thought he was in Georgia?
She had said that his sister had gone.
Judge,
Lord. Set aside, Lord. Thank you.
And broader reason.
North Dakota.
Another person that y'all work with?
I didn't work with him. He worked with Mike through the apprenticeship.
Let me ask a better question. Did Robert Mercado also work in Dissing?
Yes.
When Michael would go to work, did he drive some vehicle?
Yes.
And have you seen that vehicle?
Yes.
Was that vehicle present at the Schaefer residence while you were there?
Yes.
And did it have a flat tire?
Yes.
But was this the same vehicle that might be taking to work the previous week?
Yes.
Now, while you were there, did Lori Shaver describe any sort of argument that she had had with Michael before she claims he left?
Yes.
And what was that argument about?
Yeah, it was about she had Kendall's phone number inside the man's phone and he had already erased it.
Now, after this interaction at Michael's home, did you try to contact him?
Yes.
How did you try to contact him?
Tried anything with
text message. Did you also try physically calling him?
Yes.
When you would call him, did anyone ever answer that number?
No.
And when you would text, were you getting any sort of response?
Sometimes.
During the time frame that the responses that you got his text, was the tone and the way those texts were sent to you, was that different than messages you had received from Mr. Shaver in the past?
Yes.
How's that?
This wasn't worded. It wasn't his joking self.
Now, between the time you last saw Michael Shaver in November and mid-December of 2015, did you have any other contact with Laura Shaver?
Yes.
And did she tell you about various items of Michael's that she had sold?
Yes.
What items of Mike's had she sold at that point?
She had sold his TVs, his tools, everything.
Okay. And when you're talking about his tools, are you talking about the tools at Sissy or tools that he had at the home?
Tools he had at home.
And did she tell you how much she got for these items?
Yes.
And how much was that?
$1,000.
And did you ask her if she was going to send any of that money to Mike?
No.
No. Did you ask her if she was sending any of the money?
No.
Did she mention any other property of Mike's that she was trying to sell?
Yes.
What was that?
She said that Michael had contacted her and wanted her to sell one of his rifles to somebody he knew.
Were you familiar with his various firearms?
So.
How were you familiar with the firearms?
Him and I looked at it mostly when we didn't talk about it. We had some conversation about it.
After she told you that these firearms were going to be for sale, did she ask you to do anything with the firearms?
She asked me to go into the house and make sure all the chambers were clear and put them on safe.
And did you do that?
Yes.
Did she give you a price for the firearms?
She wanted to sell them to me, yes.
And how much was she willing to How much did she want to sell those guns to you?
$4,500.
Were you interested in buying them?
I wanted to buy them, but not
that price. Yeah. What
the price? Mr. Merritt, please get closer to the microphone. Electronic court reporting is having some difficulty picking you up, so please get as close as you can and speak up to the best of your ability. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Why were you interested in purchasing
these firearms? I'm a firearm enthusiast, and I wanted to hold them on to, in case Mike came back and he wanted them, I could sell them back to him.
Were you planning on selling them back to him at the price that you paid?
Yeah, he could just pay me back. It'd be fine.
How much did you offer her for those firearms?
$2,000.
Did she accept that?
No.
Did she ever contact you about the guns again?
Yes.
And when was this?
Nearing Christmas, probably a week or two before Christmas that same year.
And did she tell you anything about her efforts to dispose of those guns?
Yeah, she said she sold them for $4,300 and that she got to keep two.
Now, while this is going on, are you trying to reach out and get in touch with Michael Shaver about these firearms?
Yes.
And did you receive any responses from the number previously associated with Mr. Shaver?
Eventually, yes.
What response did you get from Mike about these firearms?
He had told me that he thought I was trying to steal his guns.
And did he reference anything about the price that Lori had sold the guns for?
No.
Now, the tools that you had at Disney, whatever happened to those?
I have them in my possession.
And why do you hold on to that?
Well, they're tools. I'm a tool junkie, so. But
before Mr. Shaver's body was discovered,
yeah.
Was there a purpose of you taking possession?
Yeah, if you ever come back and need his tools, he's a mechanic by trade.
Now, had you ever socialized at the Shaver residence itself?
Yes.
And when was the last time you were over at that residence, with November 2015 being the time that Mr. Shaver isn't here?
It had been Labor Day weekend that year.
At that point, was there any sort of fire pit in the backyard?
No.
What was back
there? A duck pond.
And when you talk about a duck pond, what was going on back there?
They had some pet ducks, and they were digging a pond so that they could concrete it and have the ducks a place to swim.
At the excavation and digging of that duck pond already started?
It was some done, yes. Like the outside perimeter was dug so you could see the outside shape, and that was about it.
No further questions.
All right, thank you, Mr. Wiggs.
Yes, please, the court.
Yes, sir.
Sir, Lori, is your testimony told you that Mike went to his mom's house?
No.
What'd it tell you?
That he went to his sister's house.
Sister's house, and where was that?
She said it was somewhere in Georgia.
Somewhere in Georgia. That's your explicit recall, correct?
Mm.
Okay. And you likewise had an explicit recall moment when you said it was probably sometime in the summer that he was living at the airport, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So you would agree with me. You're not really clear as to the detail about all the conversations and everything that took place.
Pretty clear.
Pretty clear? Okay. When you say you got these writings, okay, could you show us how you could clarify this one came from Lori Shaver, this one came from Michael, this one came from this location, this came from Michael. Do you know how you could do that?
I can't do that. I just know it comes from his phone.
You're not capable of doing that, but you speak, you've spoken on your direct examination as if these things were represented to you, and in fact, you don't know who or where they came from, correct?
It came from Michael's number.
Michael's number. But you don't know who sent those, do you?
No.
Okay. Let's be clear on that. Now, you said that you had this relationship with Michael. How often would y'all get together off work?
Every couple of weeks.
Every couple of weeks? Okay. How often did you do that every couple of weeks?
Two or three times.
Two or three times.
Yeah, maybe once a week, maybe once every couple weeks.
Two or three times.
Yeah.
For how long?
After I had finally met Lori, we started doing things as a family that way.
Give me a date.
I can't give you a date.
Yeah, you can't give me a date, okay? Now, between 11/7 in 2015 and 9/15 of 2016, how many times were you at the Shaver residence?
A couple times that I went and seen Lori.
Okay. That's the date of the information. You witnessed no homicide, did you?
No.
Okay. You don't know specifically who sent you certain information, do you?
No.
How well did you know the kids, the children in this relationship?
Not very well.
Okay. You know of any health issues of any of the children?
No.
Okay. You spoke about you went to some truck show or?
Tractor show.
Tractor show?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And how long were you there?
I was there from around 10 o'clock in the morning to 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
And Mike had a relationship going as well with some girl named Kendall, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Was that a productive relationship? Did it go south, so to speak? What?
I can only tell you what he told me, but yeah, eventually it ended.
It ended, right? Did it ever occur to you some of those emails may have been from Kendall or somebody else?
No.
Okay, that never occurred to you?
No.
Okay. You don't know who murdered Michael Shaver, do you?
No.
But you've taken the stand and you said that Lori Shaver sold some guns, right?
Yes.
But you have no knowledge.
No.
So what does that prove to you?
I don't know.
Does it prove anything? You ever
No.
Okay, very well. Now, would Mike sometimes drive to work Lori's white truck?
Yes.
Okay. So we're talking about a truck at the residence that was observed, correct?
Yes.
But you know Michael was driving Lori's white truck as well, correct?
Yes.
And any tools that were sold?
Do you have any idea how that may be tied to the death of Michael Shaver?
No.
Do you have any knowledge whether or not Lori needed anybody when she sold those things?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know if she needed money, no.
Okay. It would make sense, would it not, that got him maybe sold for monetary reasons?
Sure.
Thank you, sir.
Could you write? Correspondence you've had with Michael Shaver after the Rivers and Melody been made, is that solely from
that? Yes, sir. No emails.
And when you went over there and saw Michael Shaver's vehicle at his residence, when you went and checked on him at November 12th, was Lori Shaver's truck also there?
Yes.
Nothing further, Jeff.
Thank you.
Jeff.
All right. And may the witness be excused from his subpoena?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you, sir. You're excused from further testimony. Have a good day. I think this would be an appropriate time to break for the day. It's 5:01 p.m.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.